Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan. We've got kind of a special Sunday edition today. Not a whole lot of news, Adams, just a bunch of rookies signing deals that they have to sign anyway. So we're not even going to talk much about the news. We're just going to do sort of a special, what I like to think of as a roast of some golden cows. Things that are normally untouchable, things that we normally don't make a lot of fun of, things that are loved and heralded in a lot of cases, but not in every case. We're going to take this chance to explain why that's crap and why a lot of these things are terrible. So joining me today is the man from Prison Zone 6, Kevin. How's it going, Kevin?
Hey, Justin. How are you? Going well over here in Prison Zone 6. Happy to be on a Sunday show.
Right? Oh, man, I'm glad to have you. And then we have, back by popular demand, Monty, our Raider superfan, who somehow has managed to distract his children long enough to squeeze in just a bit of time for us.
I just told my wife that this might give me an opportunity to talk some smack about Cry Brady, and she said, go do what you got to do, but make it quick.
She just looks over at you. Godspeed. All right, so...
Just so she doesn't have to listen to it.
So, as I said, basically what we're going to do on today's show, we're going to keep it short, we're going to keep it sweet, is we're going to talk about things that you don't normally talk about as far as things that we think are overrated, things that we think are beloved and shouldn't be beloved. Monty kind of previewed one of his examples. I know Kevin and I both have some that we want to get to as well. So, Kevin, since you potentially have a ticking time clock of family time, let's go ahead and start with one of yours. So, Monty, who do you want to start with?
I guess we'll start with just the media in general. You're watching a game, and, you know, I'm a big fat dude sitting on my couch, and I'm watching these guys who are the top percentage of the top percent of human athletes and physical ability on the planet Earth that are playing football. And some of the announcers will start to try to convince me that, boy, this has been a 10-play drive. Those defenders, they just look exhausted, you know. But wouldn't then, by the same account, the offensive linemen also be exhausted? You generally don't have packages where you're subbing in your left tackle or your center. I mean, these are large human beings that are just as tired as the defense. The defense is getting rotations. There's TV timeouts. There's quarter breaks. You take a long halftime break to watch, Katy Perry up on the stage. Just the notion that these athletes in the peak of their physical career are getting exhausted by playing a kid's game on a Sunday afternoon is just ridiculous to me.
So are you saying they're not getting exhausted, or that we're?
I'm sure they're getting exhausted, but it's a narrative that they just go to, like when they don't have anything else to say. It's like, I'm sure they're getting tired. Of course, I mean they're getting into mini car crashes on a basis, but the offense is just as tired as the defense. Like the offensive linemen are just as tired as the defensive linemen. Like everyone out there is on the same level of tired, but they'll pan the camera to the biggest defensive lineman with his hands on his hips. And then they'll want me to believe that he's way more tired than the other team. I think it's silly. Like all these guys are, in great shape. All these guys are playing the exact same amount of snaps, the offense and the defense. And they're both tired, they're both calling time out and drinking some Gatorade and, getting right back after it. I just think that it's an easy narrative if there's a long drive and the players give up a touchdown and be like, oh man, the defenders were exhausted. Or they're just not as good as the offense and the offense beat them and put up 6 points on the scoreboard. Either way you want to look at it, it just feels like a lazy story. And it always kind of irks me on a Sunday afternoon.
Man, coming at the entire league right out of the gate. Brutal, Monty. What about you, Kevin? What do you got?
Let's see here. I sort of agree with Monty's perspective, how the media, it bothers me a lot. Not necessarily his take on players getting tired. But, I see where he's coming from my guest. I really do. But what I want to – what I hate about the media is how they just find these two or three players in every sport, really, but mainly football and basketball, that are just – seem to have such a perfect image, just like such a clean-cut image. There's nothing wrong with being a clean-cut, stand-up character guy, don't get me wrong. But when ESPN and all these networks, NFL Network, Fox, they just pretty much gargle over the likes of Russell Wilson, J.J. Watt, Mariota. Like, they're the most perfect individuals in the world. Not only are they good football players, but just the fact that they're pretty much Mother Teresa reincarnated. They just nauseate me with their praise over them about what they do on and off the field. It, honestly, it's like, we get it. We get it. Russell Wilson is a good guy. Nice little story. Third-round pick. Mm-hmm. Humble guy. Sort of lame. Well, actually, very lame. But we don't need to get this information that just crammed down our throat how he's the nicest guy in the Seahawks, how he's doing this off the field. And J.J. Watt is so dedicated to football, he's like, doesn't even see his family, only like every 3 weeks he's that dedicated. It's like, okay, we get it, you have a man crush on all of them, can we go on to the next topic, please?
Well, okay, let me ask you this though, how much do you think that comes from like the media coverage, and how much do you think that comes from like the players and their camps themselves like promoting themselves this way, trying to like, you know, look at me, look at what a good thing I'm doing, hey everybody bring your cameras and watch me do a good thing?
I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, they're all a corporation. They're marketing themselves, but the media doesn't have to play into it, too. I don't know. Is the media getting money from how much money Russell Wilson signs for his next sneaker deal? I mean, why do they have to ham it up in addition with these guys? I mean, we get it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally there with you. I think that you know, a lot of these players who we're going to be bashing today a little bit, that's exactly the issue with me too, is, you know, they project this image, and there's not a lot of evidence that that's anything other than, you know, them checking off boxes as far as like, okay, did I do, you know, am I doing this good deed? All right, now publish it, tweet it, Facebook it, put it on your Grindr profile. I don't know. Just get that out there. Right. So I'm definitely with you on that one.
Before you leave off of the media, I think it works the other way too, right? Like, oh, this guy's a cancer in the locker room. Like the other, you know what a cancer in the locker room is? Losing. If your team is losing, then that guy becomes a problem. That very same player could be on a winning team and nobody really cares what his prima donna personality is. If the team is winning, that's like the elixir that makes the locker room so harmonious. But when they're losing, rather than, you know, try to work on the X's and O's of why that team might just not be good enough, they'll pick out one of the Jimmys or the Joes and be like, boy, that guy, he seems like a real cancer. Maybe the team's just not that good, and that's why they're losing.
No, I completely agree with Monty. That's one of the biggest things that pisses me off. Depending on what team it is and what player, they're going off on the sideline, whether it be yelling at a player or just showing emotion on the sideline. If that's Tom Brady, that's just because he doesn't settle for anything less than greatness. So he's getting on his teammates. That's why he's a great leader. But if it's Dez Bryant, it's because he's prima donna. He's not getting the ball enough, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not just saying that because Dez Bryant is like the main target of that criticism. But just depending on the media's view of you, your temper tantrum or what have you not, like Odell Beckham. Like, it's like, I don't like Odell Beckham, but the media just this year completely just bombarded him. Like, sure, he was doing a lot of crazy stuff, a lot of drawing attention away from the Giants, but it wasn't really that big a deal. You know, everything he did was a big deal. Everything T.O. did was a big deal. Everything Dez does is a big deal. Like, it's just calm down. They're football players. They're passionate. Yeah. Not everyone can be a playboy billboard model like Tom Brady. He does no wrong, but everyone else is just like, oh my God, the NFL just pisses me off with that stuff. Oh, the locker room cancer. Just give me a break.
Like, I wish that Nick, our chief superfan, was here just so he could shed a little light. Like, my assumption is that all journalists are just lazy. You know, they just pick the lowest hanging fruit, throw it up on a tagline, and try to get some clicks. I mean, I just, the coverage of the NFL, for the most part, is just so cheesy. Like, come on, man. Like, dig into it a little bit deeper, or don't share the children's, you know, healthcare event that these players are going to. Like, get a little more teeth into your stories, or don't even bother. Like, it just seems like lazy narrative.
Also, on their part, Monty, like, just to defend the NFL for one quick second here, I hate to do it, but like, the NFL is like no other sport. They have to like put out some news story like every hour. It's not like the MLB or even the NBA. It's like, people just want so much news from the NFL that they just have to create something, and often they're just doing it out of nowhere. So people are like, well, that's a horrible story. Who did you get paid to write crap like that? I mean, they really have no choice sometimes. They just need to put some news out there on the NFL. This country demands it.
I understand it. I mean, we consume a lot of information. I get it. I just, you know, I'm just taking a minute to vent out some of the stuff that irks me a little bit. So
yeah, and that's exactly what.
Thank you for the indulgence.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we're here for. So for mine, I want to point my crosshairs directly at a couple of players. I'm gonna start with one don't know how you'll feel about it, Kevin. I want to talk a little bit about Troy Aikman, and this conversation started mainly just because of kind of a funny meme I saw going around that compared the career stats of Troy Aikman and Jay Cutler. And what was clear is that, just from a statistical standpoint, Troy Aikman was a worse version of Jay Cutler, pretty much in every category, in terms of yards per game, passer rating, completion percentage, interception rate. There was a lot. Pretty much across the board, he was worse than Jay Cutler. Now, I know what people are going to say. Different era, or, early 1990s, the quarterback wasn't asked to do as much. And I get that. On the flip side, though, Jay Cutler never had Emmitt Smith. Jay Cutler never had Michael Irving. Like,
Larry Allen.
Yeah, Troy Aikman. And you guys will hear me talk about another quarterback in sort of a similar boat later when I have a conversation with Greg. Troy Aikman, to me, is the ultimate, like, the right guy in the right place at the right time. He has three rings because he was on a dynasty, and he was basically kicking and screaming. The dude doesn't have many more touchdowns and interceptions in his career. His 61% completion percentage is basically what you would consider bare minimum for a good starter. There was nothing remotely special about his game whatsoever, but because he happened to be the quarterback on this team that went to a bunch of Super Bowls, he is in the Hall of Fame. And he has no personal merits that indicate he should be in.
Oh, that's a lot to digest.
it's an example of why the statistics don't tell the whole story, I'm kind of interested to hear your take, Kevin, because you sometimes will go to the stats, and this is a clear-cut case. If Jay Cutler has better stats than Troy Aikman, is Jay Cutler then a better quarterback? Question mark?
I mean, clearly Jay Cutler is not a better quarterback. I mean, there's no way to really debate the stats. The stats are what they are. I mean, Justin covered it. Troy's first year was in 1989, completely different football game then and now. I mean, completely different passing games, completely different, pretty much a completely different sport. So it's really hard to compare the numbers. I mean, you can't really do it. Justin did raise a good point, though. I mean, the whole point is ludicrous, but the point within his ludicrous world is of Troy did only have 165 to 141 touchdown interception. I mean, that's not – I mean, I didn't think it was – I thought it would be definitely better than that. So that's a little surprising to see. But, I mean, yeah, he was in a good situation. There's no doubt about it. Great offensive line. All-time NFL leading rusher on the team, Michael Irvin. Great defense. But he was by no means – I mean – also, you're coming from me. I'm only 28 years old here. So when Troy Aikman was in his prime, the Cowboys were in their prime, mind you, I was like 5 or 7 years old. So I'm not the greatest person to ask if you wanted me to remember about Troy Aikman. But I do know he was a good quarterback, a great quarterback, perfect for the team. I mean,
The story that usually gets brought up, or like the commentary, the narrative about Troy Aikman was, he had the skill set to do all of those other things. He could have put up 350 yards passing every single game, but he was just such a heady player that he did just what he needed to do because he was more into the team winning than him getting the stats, which is kind of like Justin telling me he would have got into Harvard. He just didn't bother to fill out the application because he had other stuff.
Yeah,
There's no way to tell.
But look at this. Like Troy Aikman, his passing stats are his like yards and all that is pretty low. But like when you go to his attempts and then you go to Emmitt Smith's rushing attempts, like and starting in 91, Smith had 365 rushing attempts, 373. Then he got hurt, missed three games in 93, still had 283 attempts. Then 368, 377, 327. So no one runs the ball that much in the league. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you crazy? I mean, where is he going to get these yards when the team is handing the ball off 425-plus times a year, you know? So, I mean, it was a way different game for what Troy was doing when Jay Cutler just slinging around the yard.
I don't disagree that it's a different era. So if we just compare him to his contemporaries, he never in his entire career led the league in completions or attempts or yards or touchdowns, yards per attempt. I don't think there was ever a year where you could make the case that he might have been the best quarterback in the league, yet somehow he's in the Hall of Fame. So do with that what you will.
I get what you're saying because there's just so many quarterbacks from his era who just come to your mind before Troy does. I mean, it's a fair point. I mean, and I agree with you in the sense that I think Troy should be on the Hall of Fame, but I agree with you in the sense that he was in a very good situation and he's not as skilled or he's not as good as a quarterback as some of his other contemporaries from this era, a la Favre, Steve Young even. I mean, I get what you're saying, but...
Two things we can all agree on, I think.
Yeah.
One, he's a more deserving Hall of Fame player than Jerome Bettis. I think we can all agree on that.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, 100%.
Two, his rookie year mullet is mullet Hall of Fame. I mean, that was... It took some huge seeds to walk into the league rocking that kind of a mullet.
I agree with that. Yeah, put that on the back of his bus. All right, Monty, what you got next?
I'm going to preface this. I'm not saying that Tom Brady is not a good quarterback. I'm not saying that Tom Brady is not one of the best quarterbacks, surefire first ballot Hall of Famer, probably the best quarterback of this current generation. I'm comfortable with all of those things, but it just seems like since this last Super Bowl against the Falcons, now everyone in the world is just, there's no contest. Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time, and I have a problem with that. One, if you're just going because of these two Super Bowls, if after that amazing Julio Jones catch, if they had just given it to the fullback three times, kicked a field goal, he doesn't get that Super Bowl ring. Everybody knows if they had given the ball to Marshawn Lynch in the Seahawks Super Bowl, he doesn't get that Super Bowl ring. So if you're just counting Super Bowl rings, that's so stupid because it's a team game and they, you know, those two single plays or moments in time could have changed that narrative. So I'm just talking about quarterbacking skill. Like just the ability to throw the ball. And so I'm older than Kevin, probably older than Justin, but I grew up watching guys like Dan Marino, Dan Fouts, John Elway. Dan Marino would be my example where that dude would get the crap beat out of him. He'd get up every play and he could throw the ball like his arm strength, his ability to throw the ball. He was just a better quarterback. Now, if he had gotten to play with the single greatest general manager / coach of my lifetime in Bill Belichick, there's no doubt in my mind that he would have won more Super Bowls than he currently has. But that era of quarterbacks, when you could beat the crap out of the wide receivers, where you could hit the quarter, that was part of the game plan, was hit the quarterback, knock him down on the ground, versus this current mold of quarterbacks where if you get anywhere near their face mask, they just throw their arms up in the air on their, you know, with tears in their eyes, start screaming for a flag. So it's hard for me to say, granted, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, great player, but the greatest quarterback of all time. I just think that I still think that there's a healthy debate there. I'm not willing to just, you know, roll over and say, since he won some Super Bowls on teams that, you know, there's never a moment. The only time when Tom Brady was like dominating in the stat sheet was when he had arguably the greatest wide receiver deep threat in the history of the game. Other than that, in the beginning of his year, I think Vinatieri won a couple Super Bowls. That defense kept him in the games. It's not like Tom Brady was putting up Dan Marino numbers for a decade straight. Like, the dude just plays in a terrible division the last 12 years, gets a first round bye in the playoffs, and then just has to put together three amazing games with the greatest coach of all time. Like, I understand that he's good. I understand that he's a great competitor and a leader. And God, he's such a dreamboat. I mean, put him on any kind of a marketing board you got. I get all that. But the greatest quarterback, like the best quarterback to play that position, no way, man. Not even close. Like, I think there's like three or four or five guys that you could put at him. And I wouldn't even put like the Joe Montanas above it. These guys, Brady and Joe Montana, are throwing it 10 yards down the field. And then Jerry Rice is running it to the house. You need like a guy, like an actual quarterback who can wing the ball 45 yards down the field on a rope. Like, that to me is more impressive than Bill Belichick out scheming some inferior defensive coordinator so that Gronkowski is wide open 3 yards down the field and then can truck down the field 50 yards and then the Patriots win the game. So you can tweet at Monsadius and say, get over the tuck rule or whatever you want to say. But I don't think he's the greatest quarterback of all time. Just because he plays in a different level and he gets to play with Belichick, who made Matt Castle look good, won games with rookie no-name quarterbacks last year. Like, he's just two steps ahead of all the other coaches in the league, or always has been. And Tom Brady was just a perfect situation and a perfect time to ride that wave. And he should thank Mr. Belichick each and every night when he goes home to hang out with his supermodel wife. Yep, thank you. Thank you. It had to be said.
Bravo. Monty, I agree with every word of that. I mean, his early Super Bowls, he was a cog. He was not driving the machine. They never won one when he was putting up big yardage and he was really the engine driving it all. And then, like you said, these last two, I mean, some terrible decisions on the opposing coaching staff. I put those firmly on Bill Belichick. I think that his And that's all you can point at. You know, you talk about best quarterbacks of his era. I still say I think a healthy, still able to throw the football Peyton Manning is light years ahead of Tom Brady in what he can do. I have no doubt in my mind that you could take a prime Peyton Manning, drop him on any team in the league, and that's a top 10 offense. I don't think there's any evidence you can do that with Tom Brady. None whatsoever. I mean, the closest we ever came was seeing him come out for a season, and Matt Castle all of a sudden is winning 11 games. So, yeah, I could not agree with you more on that, Monty.
So I just think that we can't, like, if somebody throws it out, if you're at a bar and you're drinking beers and somebody throws out, oh, there's the GOAT on TV again, greatest quarterback, just challenge him on it. Don't let him get away with that crap. Mm-hmm. They at least need to back it up with some real reasons, and it can't just be, oh, dude's got 5 Super Bowl rings. Like, he could easily have 3, and I think that a better quarterback with Bill Belichick would have even had more. So I just need a little bit more than the Super Bowl rings, because people were saying he was one of the greatest quarterbacks when he only had 3 rings, right? So, like, it's a team game, and it's not like basketball where one player makes that huge of a difference. I know the quarterback's the biggest and most important position, but come on, man. I think this is still up for debate. And when you guys are out there drinking at the bars, I think you gotta push back on this narrative a little bit.
All right, then let's send it over to you, Kevin. Who is next on your list?
Next on my list. I mean, we were talking about Troy Aikman there for a second, and I know before the show we were talking about a different quarterback. So I'm gonna throw Terry Bradshaw under the bus here and just pretty much make the exact same argument you made with Troy Aikman. Obviously, I didn't watch Terry Bradshaw play growing up because he ended his career in 1983, 6 years before I was born. But just when I looked up his stats on Pro Football Reference, the first thing that I saw was his rookie year. He threw 6 touchdowns and 24 interceptions. Granted, it's 1970, completely different era, but in any era, that's just terrible. And I can't really get over anything else after looking at that stat, to be honest with you. It's so offensively bad that, I mean, his stats are just mediocre at best. Like, I know just you can't judge just by looking at his numbers on a screen right now without ever watching him play live. But, I mean, he played in the 70s in the Steelers, early 80s. Best defense ever, debatably, with the Steel Curtain in that era. I mean, the guy had a lot going for him. The Steelers had a lot going for them besides Terry Bradshaw. He had a pretty great situation himself there, wouldn't you say, Justin?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so a little bit later in the show, I'm going to have a conversation with Greg on exactly that subject. And even he is a little bit understanding of our trepidation towards old Chrome Dome being in the Hall of Fame. I mean, and so I feel like this would take a show of its own, and it's not one of the topics that I've written down, but if there is one thing even above Brady in terms of most overrated thing that people latch onto in football, it's wins. It's like, you know, if you happen to be like the backup, like free safety on the 70 Steelers, you have like 5 rings. You didn't do anything, but you've got 5 rings. Like, you know, so when, you know, we talk about these Hall of Fame quarterbacks and guys that don't necessarily deserve to be in it, or guys that are overrated, like your Terry Bradshaws, like your Troy Aikmans, like your Tom Brady's, you know, in every one of those cases, you can't make a case for how people are rating them if you take the rings out of the equation. And this is a team sport with a giant roster. I mean, you have 11 people on offense, 11 people on defense on the field on any given play, plus a bunch of rotations of backups. Yes, the quarterback's the most important one of them. But even still, there are great quarterbacks who don't have an opportunity to win a lot of games. There are terrible quarterbacks who do win a lot of games. I mean, you can't tell me that Drew Brees is not still one of the best quarterbacks in all of the NFL, despite the fact that his team has flat out sucked for the last couple of years and has had one, like, consistently in the conversation for worst defenses ever, year after year after year now. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if there's an overarching plot to, like, especially the quarterback conversation, it's that I think if stats are for losers, wins are the biggest stat of all that we point to.
And then I think even in, like, every single playoff season, there's always, like, an example. I think it was the Green Bay Packers who kind of had a collapse at the end of the game, and they literally, like, all they had to do was jump up and recover an onside kick. So you've got a roster of 53 dudes. You got 22 starters on offensive defense who are making all the big money. And then, like, a backup offensive lineman whose only job was to, like, get out of the way so the wide receiver could, like, recover the onside kick, jumps up and tries to make a play. Other team gets the ball, kicks a game-winning field goal. There ends your season. You're now out of the tournament. So
yeah, that's the NFC Championship against the Seahawks. I mean, yeah, so did Aaron Rodgers suddenly become a worse football player because that dude couldn't come down with the football?
Exactly.
Is he not as good as he would have been otherwise? I mean, is Tom Brady a better football player because the Seahawks didn't hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch? Is he a better football player because they wouldn't run the football at the end of the Falcons game just to run out the clock? Like, does that make him better than he was before? No, that's got nothing to do with it.
And to Patrick, our superfan's credit, every time I've heard him talk about the subject, he always, you know, thinks, you know, Brady's one of the best players, whatever, but he never quotes any of the other crap that you hear people say at the bar or you hear on TV. Like, he thoughtfully and objectively looks at the overall body of work, and I think his final thought was that it's just, there's too many factors to, like, break it down on just wins or losses of Super Bowls. Like, it's such a cop-out argument. So I give credit to Patrick on that for all the times I've heard him talk about Cry Brady on the podcast.
Kevin, do you want to pile on the stat with us, or do you want to tell us that we're crazy?
No, I agree with you guys. Sadly, I wish I didn't, just so we could make it more entertaining there. But, I mean, that's something that really bothers me when they talk about quarterbacks as well. Like, when they're talking about best quarterbacks, and then someone says, like, what you said, and they're like, they're more successful than so-and-so. More successful and best, those are different questions in my opinion. Like, successful is a team thing, and as Monty was saying and you were saying, there's 22 people on the field at any given play. So I mean, as you just put it, you said it perfectly, Justin. There's some great quarterbacks in terrible situations that don't win a lot of games, and then there are a lot of mediocre quarterbacks that get to the playoffs year after year because they're surrounded by a great supporting cast, a great general manager, a great coach. I mean, look at Joe Flacco. He makes the playoffs pretty much every year, except for this past year. And put Joe Flacco on the Jaguars, like, and Blake Bortles on the Ravens. I mean, we would be having a conversation, perhaps, that Blake Bortles is better than Joe Flacco, because Joe Flacco would not be doing anything heroic in Jacksonville. So, like, it really is all a matter of situation, and you can't just judge by simply looking at the wins and the L's.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you completely. All right, so let's do one last one for each of us, starting with you, Monty.
One thing that I've kind of gotten sick of over the last couple of years is, you know, people who love the NFL talking about Roger Goodell like he's in, like, you know, the evil of the league. Like, look at this guy, he's power hungry, he's doing this. Like, Roger Goodell isn't doing anything that at least 31 of the 32 billionaire owners want him to do. Like, they pay him millions and millions of dollars to take the bullets, to be the bad guy, to whatever it is. Like, he's not out there, like, going rogue and, like, making his own, like, agenda. He's doing what his bosses want him to do. And what that is to be the bad guy in certain situations so they don't have to. So when you sit there and you're like, oh, I hate Roger Goodell, he's such a whatever, you're kind of playing into it. Like, you're being fooled. Like, ask yourself the question of who's paying Roger Goodell to do those things. Like, it just seems so silly to, you know, come down on Roger Goodell over, like, the Patriots this last time. Well, guess what? The majority of the owners in the league wanted him to do that to the Patriots. He might be indifferent or benevolent. I don't know. All I know is he's getting paid, what, $25 million a year to do what his bosses are telling him to do? If my boss told me to write up, you know, put together a PowerPoint presentation on why Jerome Bettis was a Hall of Fame worthy running back against everything of my core beliefs and told me he'd give me like $2,500, I'd put together the best damn slideshow you've ever seen. Like, dude's got a job to do. He does it fairly well. And to try to, like, fall into this, like, simple trap of, like, oh, he's doing this because he's whatever, it just seems so silly to me.
Yeah, I think the you can definitely make a case that the Goodell hate is sort of its own sacred cow. All right, last one for you, Kevin.
All right, last one for me is, I don't know how to word it, but this whole player safety issue. I mean, I'm all for player safety, but the league is going a bit too far. I mean, there are points when I watch a game now for either safety issues or just for the way they change the game on the defensive side of the ball. If there's no flag for roughing the passer or defensive holding or anything of that nature, I'm like almost shocked. Well, I'm just looking for the flag. And if there's, I'm like, okay, they're about to snap it. Next play, I guess there really was no flag. It's come to that point. Like, honestly, sometimes when I'm watching the NFL, it's come to the point where, like, if a linebacker or a safety hits a player like really hard, and upon further review, it looks like a perfectly clean hit, but the sole reason the official threw the flag is because it looked like a gruesome hit, and it was a great hit. But it's like almost comes to the point where you can't hit someone really hard in the NFL, even if it's a clean hit, without getting penalized 15 yards for player safety concerns. And it drives me up the wall half the time. Just because
they're conditioning us as a fan. Like, yeah, every time you're watching a game, you see a big hit, then, like, half the people in the room are like, oh, where's the flag? Where's the flag? And I'm like, where's the flag? It was just a good play, man.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. Like, I get there's player safety, but at some level, it's a dangerous sport. You can't take the violence out of a sport where you're running at each other full speed. You're trying to tackle someone full speed. You're trying to prevent someone from getting tackled. Like, that's the nature of the sport. You can't just be like, try to remove every risk from the sport. Then you're going to get what they had in South Park in their version of football, whenever that beautiful episode aired in like 2013, when they end up playing basically flag football, touch football, and then words tackle them, not even, or something of that nature. It's getting like almost laughable the amount of physicality that's being taken away from the game.
Part of me also thinks that they're throwing these flags because they want the drive to continue because they want points on the scoreboard. If you're not putting up, you know, at least 8 touchdowns between the two teams on any given matchup, the fantasy football community and the average Joe or whatever is like pissed off. Like, I mean, most people who love football, if it's 12-7 and it's a good game, like you're still involved in the game. It's not just about fantasy. It's like they don't give you any credit for enjoying the game.
No, I agree. And like when they try to sell me an argument to shorten the game by like 10 minutes, that will shorten the game. I'm like, I don't care about it. I wanted to go 10 minutes longer. What else do I have to do at Sunday at 4:30 p.m. besides go back to my life, which I don't want to do. So like, just let the Cowboys go for an extra 20 minutes and I'll be even happier. Like, why are you trying to, you know? Just people just complain for all the wrong reasons. It pisses me off.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that one. All right, so for my last one, I'll be honest. I had a list of different ones to do. There's quite a few things I could choose from. So just a few examples of things that I'm not going to do, but I would do maybe on another show, things that are badly overrated that I would argue against. Emmett Smith, Ozzie Newsome, the Ravens general manager, Rob Gronkowski, hate directed at Joe Buck, the like pink uniform breast cancer awareness stuff that the NFL does, not because I'm against that, but I think the way the NFL does it is crap and their motivations are bad. And Eli Manning. So these are all things that I think in their own different way are terrible, that I don't have a chance to get into. And again, the mom's one. Mom, if you're listening, which I know you're not, it's not, I don't have an issue with moms. I have an issue with disingenuously celebrating them when you have a terrible record on that subject. All right. All right, love you, Mom. Okay, so the last one I want to get into, and Monty, I apologize in advance for this one. Bo Jackson. I am so sick and tired of hearing about Bo Jackson. Dude played in the league for 3.5 years. He had probably the best highlight reel you will ever see, and outside of that, didn't do anything. The dude never clipped 1,000 yards in a season. He never averaged more than, I mean, he once averaged more than 80 yards a game, just once in his career. His yards per attempt are, you know, good, not incredible. And so for a dude to have like a 3.5 year career and to be remembered like this, like super god who, you know, would have been the most incredible football player of all time if not shortened by injury, we have seasons of tape on him. And it's good. It's not great. It's not amazing. It's fine. Couldn't catch the ball a lick. He could run pretty good. And so three of the four years he played, he had the longest run of the season. And in each of those cases, that one run accounted for more than 10% of his total yardage. It has to be the single most overrated football player of all time, because everybody is convinced he's like this football god, and he was just fine, and it drives me nuts. I think in Tecmo Bowl, that is not true. He was a god in Tecmo Bowl, but in actual football, no way. This heaping praise we have on Bo Jackson is crap.
You done? You feel better? You feel better spewing these lies out into the ether?
Every word of that was. Oh my goodness! All right,
every
all right,
one of those two. Let's go back to the first word that you said. Dude had an amazing highlight reel. He only played 3.5 seasons. Had an amazing highlight reel. So he had a number of plays that were highlight worthy, and he only played half the season in each of those 3 seasons. So it's not like he's playing 16 games a year to get those highlights that you saw. He's coming off of a baseball field and then playing in week 7 and running people over. Like, dude was faster and bigger and stronger than anyone we had seen up until that point, and he was a genetic freak. Like, he didn't practice. He didn't go to training camp. He didn't do any of the things most football players need to do in order to be at the top of their game. And Bo Jackson came in, and, you know, he was a hell of a player. And my 2-year-old just walked into the room because he heard me talk about Bo Jackson, and he wanted to come in and voice just how truly great. Hey, Ben, come here for a second. Can you say touchdown Raiders? Touchdown Raiders. Yeah. Yeah, Bo Jackson was amazing. Monty,
that's
amazing.
Perfect. I can play that next to the clip of you saying touchdown, Chiefs.
That's dirty fool. I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's hard to say whether or not, you know, he gets too much praise or whatever. I mean, I'd have to be in that conversation to see what it is. You hit the nail on the head. His Tecmo Bowl status was unparalleled. Nobody could play with Bo in Tecmo Bowl. But as far as just like fun player to watch on a Sunday, when Bo Jackson was lining up with the Raiders, dude, it was super fun. He would run people over, and he would run faster than everyone else on the field. So he was just fun. I don't know. I'm not putting him up there with – I didn't go to bat for him when we did the greatest running backs of the NFL when we did that last – I mean, he's no Walter Payton or Barry Sanders, but he was something to behold, and he was a lot of fun to watch on Sundays.
All right. Based on what you said, I do need to make one correction. And you're right. I completely forgot to point out that he came in halfway through the season and had fresh legs while everybody else was beat to crap. So thank you for pointing that out as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No comment. No comment.
Kevin, you got anything to add to that conversation?
No. You guys had a beautiful conversation. I'll stick out of it.
All right, perfect. So next guys, we're going to throw it over to a conversation I had with Greg to get his thoughts on the same subject. You'll hear us talk about a few of the things we have talked about and get his perspective on stuff, which is always good. So at least for now, Monty, where can we find you? You mentioned it earlier.
At Monsadius, or just tweet at the Next Fan Up podcast, and we can look for Bo Jackson and Marshawn Lynch highlights together on the internet to tweet back and forth.
Agreed. And Kevin, who has pretty boy swag?
Dez has pretty boy swag. So you can find me at DezGotPBSwag on the tweet machine. I can't believe that this whole show actually has passed us, and I didn't even bring up Cam Newton, and that was like the only person I wanted to bash coming into this. It's crazy how it never goes according to plan.
This show will have a sequel, I promise you. I have so many more names on this list I didn't even get to.
I know. I am disappointed. So if you want to tweet to me about Cam Newton, anyone, find me at DezGotPBSwag on Twitter. Cam Newton, if you're out there, I'd love to talk to you as well.
All right, and with that, let's throw it over to me and Greg.
Okay, I'm going to throw it over to Greg, our Steelers fan, up next. He's got some particular targets for things and people that some people like that maybe he doesn't feel so positive about. So, Greg, why don't you go ahead and just take it from there?
Okay, so my number one thing I hate right now in the NFL is I hate this QBR stat that ESPN manufactured. I felt like they only manufactured so their ugly quarterback and Trent Dilfer had something to talk about on TV. And my outlier game here, to prove that it's not worth anything compared to passer rating or why we don't need it, is Charlie Batch in 2010 supposedly had a perfect score of the 99.9 passer rating in a game against Tampa Bay when he was filling in for Roethlisberger. And he threw for under 200 yards, and he did throw for 3 touchdowns, but he threw for 2 interceptions. And that was the perfect QBR game, according to ESPN. So that's my one problem with ESPN is, that they have this stat that, you know, gave a perfect score to a marginal game, fine. But then the follow-up is that ESPN won't even show us how it's calculated, so we can't calculate it ourselves, unlike the passer rating. And then on top of that, they pump it down our throats like we're supposed to recognize it as some type of profound way to measure the game. And I just think it's exactly the same as passer rating. And since we already have passer rating, why do we need this QBR thing? Which, by the way, I think QBR just stands for quarterback passer rating.
Okay. I get what you're saying, and I cannot defend that Charlie Batch rating. And I said that I actually kind of like Charlie Batch as a backup. But I definitely don't have any defense with that. But in its defense, you know, when I look at, like, the stats from last year, you know, their top three guys are Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Dak Prescott. Their bottom three are Bortles, Fitzpatrick, and Keenum. I mean, that at least passes the smell test, right? I mean, that's not terrible.
It's not terrible, but I'd love to see what their passer rating is compared to that. And then where ESPN really gets me then is that they somehow calculate QBR for someone who played in the 80s or someone who played like in 1992. I mean, the stats only been around, what, 7 years or something? Like, if we don't know how to calculate it, you know, why are you made this fictitious thing and forcing us to use it or trying to force us to use it? I just don't see the value other than ESPN can pound their chest. So that's what annoys me. And then when we get on this podcast and we start talking and then people throw a QBR at me and I have no idea what they're talking about because I'm expecting like to be based off what, 159 or something, and it's based off 100 and I'm just all confused. So that's not necessary.
So you're saying when we're debating quarterbacks, I can't say that blah, 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 had a quarterback rating it had a QBR of 84. Boom, conversation over. That doesn't really fly with you.
Well, no, because like 84 as a passer rating is like, eh, okay, that's like okay game. So
let me ask you, so if you're trying to figure out who is a good quarterback, though, not to try and defend QBR too much, but I mean, I kind of like it. Like, what do you go off of? What's your, if you're just looking at the spreadsheet when the year is over, how do you know who's a good quarterback?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of factors, of course. I mean, you actually, I think, have to watch a lot of guys, too. But I do look at the touchdown and interception ratio. I mean, as flawed as just doing that hurts. The passer rating in general gives you a good idea of the stat line. And, I mean, stats do matter at some point here in the quarterback conversation. But, I mean, wins are a big deal, too. And most importantly, it's just what you can tangibly see out there. I mean, no one's going to mistake Tom Brady for Alex Smith. But QBR-wise, you might.
Okay, the fact that you took an opportunity to take a shot on Alex Smith is not lost on me, but I'm gonna let that fly. all right, so you don't love QBR. I kind of like it, but I get your point. If Charlie Batch throwing for like 186 yards and two interceptions is the single greatest quarterback performance of all time, apparently I have been watching this game the wrong way for a very long time.
Exactly.
So that being said, let's move on. Who else do you think has drawn your ire? Who else do you think is deserving of a little bit of heat?
Okay, so I'm gonna change up here on you, and I actually have two more. But the next guy, which I think everyone will agree with here, is this Ian Rappaport. I mean, I'm tired of this guy. I mean, I have a great GIF that you're seeing right now that he's just getting hit with a football on the sideline here. And that's basically how I feel about him, is that everyone should hit him with a football because I feel like he's fed his stories. He's fed his talking points. He's trying to be Adam Schefter and he's just not, and he just needs to go away. I mean, I get that he's probably a nice person, but I'm just tired of him breaking these non-stories about so-and-so is going to be traded this offseason and then nothing happening. And no one even, you know, no one can even validate the story's true. I'm just done with him.
Yeah, okay, you're not going to get a lot of disagreement with me. You know, it's so, you know, on the podcast, we've got, let's say, approximately 32 super fans, and we all try and be pretty plugged in to our team. And it's a running joke amongst this group of super fans who are pretty knowledgeable about the going ons of their teams that if Ian Rappaport reports something, we know it's not going to happen. Like every time, you know, somebody posts a tweet of his, you know, we joke about how that's never going to happen. And that seems to be the case. But I mean, he got to where he is for a reason. I mean, he's okay. Maybe he's not Adam Schefter, but is he that bad?
There's only one guy worse than him, and that's Jason LaCifora. So, I mean, that says it all.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. So, you know, in the case of Ian Rappaport, I think that the issue is at least not just the fact that, you know, his reports are frequently wrong, which they almost always seem to be. But, like, am I wrong that every time he appears on camera, he looks like just the most smug little SOB who thinks he's, like, inside and, like, giving you this information that you can't get anywhere else that, again, in his case, it's either wrong or has already been reported by somebody else who knows better?
That's exactly how I feel about him. You said it perfectly, the smugness. I hate it.
Yeah, there's definitely a smugness coming off of him.
So, okay. Switching gears, my third one, my last one here, is and this might be a little controversial, but I am actually, I'm getting older, you know, I'm starting to hit my mid-30s here, and I miss the big hits in football, and I really hate having to wait for the officials to celebrate a play. And what threw me over the edge this past season was in the Chiefs-Steelers playoff game, there was an illegal hit. I'll fully say that was an illegal hit against the Steeler cornerback, Sean Davis. He hit the receiver at the goal line and, you know, dislodged the ball or stopped him short of the goal line, which was a play he had to make with the game on the line. And he got flagged a 15-yard penalty for, you know, illegal contact to the head. And I'm just tired of them, of the NFL falsely protecting these guys and just falsely narrative that they care if these guys get hurt. And I'm kind of to the point where we compartmentalize so much as football fans that I'm just ready to compartmentalize that when these guys are playing football and they're playing willingly on the field, I don't care. I just want to see the football I saw back in the 90s. I just miss it.
Okay, so are you saying that the NFL shouldn't be taking like pro safety steps on the field?
I think they should be taking safety steps. I don't think they should be flagging these guys for these football plays where they're clearly football plays. I mean, you're all sitting there, you're watching a pass rusher bear down the quarterback, and he puts the crown of the helmet in the quarterback's chest. You go back to 2000, that's a great play. Today, it's a 15-yard penalty, extending a drive that was probably dead. So, I mean, there was no malice, in my opinion, of the guy, other than he's just trying to hit the quarterback as hard as he can. He's not trying to hurt the guy. And when the receiver's coming across the middle, unless it's that Merriweather or whatever that played for the Patriots and Redskins and whatnot, I mean, who, like, tried to headbutt guys on purpose. I mean, I don't see a lot of guys out there really trying to hurt each other, just trying to play tough and separate the ball.
Yeah, outside of the Bengals, most teams, I think, aren't intentionally trying to do that. So, but, okay, as your example, are you not citing a game where your Steelers won because of a BS holding call? Doesn't that seem just a little bit two-faced to you?
No, because the holding call was a totally separate play, but they only had the opportunity to. I mean, they only had the opportunity also because of the hard hit. But, you know, also, I mean, we're in this nature where, you know, you got ESPN that was just 2 years ago or 3 years ago had that you got lit up segment or whatever it was called, you know, and they're celebrating it. And they've had problems with the NFL showing the big videos of the big hits and then finding the guys later. I mean, it's just an all dog and pony show. We're the only ones that are being fooled are us. Like, the NFL doesn't care. The players, you know, we've heard players say they'd rather get a big hit up high than get hit low. You know, it's just part of the game at this point. And I mean, I know I'm alone on this one, but I'm just tired of questioning if a guy who makes a great football play and you see the laundry on the field, why he got, you know, why he got hit or why he didn't get hit. You know, I mean, I watch football for the big hits, or I did.
I don't think you're alone on this one. I think that I agree. I think you're right that a lot of it has to do with optics. You know, they make rules and calls that are based on how a play looks versus what a play actually does from a damage standpoint. I also just look at things like, you know, I miss the days of like the big hits and bone crunching blocks videos or whatever that they would put out. Like that was fun to me. I love that sort of thing, especially when I was playing football in like high school. I love seeing those videos. You know, I think of an example on the Seahawks, you know, a few years back where Golden Tate, back when he played for the team, absolutely blew up a Cowboys linebacker. Amazing play. And in my opinion, the Cowboys linebacker was at fault because he wasn't watching, you know, he wasn't watching what was ahead of him. So it was technically a, you know, quote, blindsided block because he didn't look where he was going. But that's on him for not keeping his head on a swivel. I mean, I look at a guy, you know, if I use your Steelers as an example, like, how would Hines Ward fare today, right? You know, here's a guy who, as much as he achieved as a receiver, achieved just as much, just absolutely annihilating guys as a blocker. Like, he would get a PI every week, wouldn't he, Greg?
I mean, he would be out of the game. Like, he'd be the 2-2 rule. But, I mean, isn't that part of the football that we're now missing is that when you had guys out there that were willing to finish blocks and willing to hit hard, you know, Todd Pinkskin back in the early 2000s, he had alligator arms going across the middle because Rodney Harrison was out there. Like, he literally totally missed like a 40-yard gain because he was terrified of footsteps. You don't see that today. And that's part of the game that we're missing. And, you know, with Golden Tate out there, shouldn't the safety who's coming up be worried about being blocked hard? Not illegally, in my opinion, if you hit him in the chest. I know that's against the rules today, but, you know, you're not diving at the guy's knees. You're hitting him up high. Shouldn't the safety worry about that? Shouldn't that be part of the game?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to disagree with you on one, and it's catch-22 where, like, you know, I think you and I both do care about the, you know, the players' long-term safety because, you know, we're so invested in our teams. You know, we know these guys, we know these teams. So, you know, if, you know, the legends of today are having like medical issues when they're out of the league, the NFL maybe doesn't care anymore, but we still do because we love them, you know, growing up and things like that. So I'm totally with you on that one. Before I let you go, I've been saving one of my sort of sacred cows for you.
Okay.
Sort of one of my players that I think, okay, he's a Hall of Famer. He won a lot of championships. And I think he was a crap football player. All right?
Okay.
I'm talking about Terry Bradshaw.
Oh. Well, okay, let's hear your reasons why.
Okay. And yes, okay, before you people come at me with pitchforks, I understand the argument about eras and, you know, the game was different, blah, 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 blah. I get it. So if I told you a quarterback had a career completion percentage of 51.9 in his career, that as a rookie, his interception percentage was 11, that he averaged about 7 yards an attempt, you would think I was talking about Tim Tebow, not this dude who won 4 championships. Okay, Terry Bradshaw was a guy who could throw the football a little bit, who just ended up on a team that was one of the best ever, and because of the rules at the time, they were able to keep together for like a decade. The dude had a free ride. You couldn't screw that up. I'm sorry, there are backup quarterbacks in the league today who are better than Terry Bradshaw. Tell me I'm crazy.
Well, you're crazy in this point that Terry Bradshaw had one of the all-time elite arms in the league. Now, he also had one of the smallest brains. But, I mean, he was a great athlete. Like, I think he was the second or third fastest guy on the Steelers when he was a rookie and a couple years after that. And I do think the air matters. I mean, everyone sees the great highlights of Lynn Swann and John Stallworth catching deep balls in Super Bowls. Those are deep balls. I mean, again, let's go back to Alex Smith. Alex Smith isn't throwing the ball past, you know, what, 3 yards downfield. So, I mean, of course, completion percentage is going to be low. And Bradshaw also was awful his first 4 years in the league. I mean, he wasn't even the starting quarterback when they broke camp in 74 when they won their first title. So, yeah, he was bad. And he had some really good years, too. But I don't think anyone's going to hate on you for hating Bradshaw, because I don't think many Steeler fans actually like him.
Wait. Steelers don't like – Steelers fans don't like them? Hold on. Explain that one to me.
Well, he talks a lot, and he talks a lot, and he talks a lot. And he talks a lot about the current team. So I don't think – you know, if one thing that is true about the Steelers fans is that they do have a little bit of rabbit ears, which I'm a victim of myself. And we don't like hearing negativity come about, like how Tom Brady owns Troy Polamalu or anything like that. So there's no love lost between Steeler Nation and Terry Bradshaw. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose. But so, you know, I look at his stats, right? So, and again, the best way I can correct for an error without pulling up like every quarterback who played is, okay, did he ever lead the league in completions? No. Did he ever lead the league in completion percentage? No. Did he ever lead the league in yards? No. Did he lead the league in interceptions? Yeah. Did he lead the league? The things in his defense is he did lead the league in both touchdowns and touchdown percentage twice. But the dude was throwing at Lynn Swann. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, you don't need to be an all-time great to complete passes to Lynn Swann. I mean, so he's a guy who, to me, is the ultimate example of just ending up in the right situation. I mean, dude lucked out. You don't have to. You don't have to be a competent football player as a quarterback to win championships on that game. Give the ball to Franco Harris. Let the steel curtain, you know, make your team win 6-3, 14 games per year, and you've got a couple of titles. I don't think that it's that ridiculous to say that here's a dude who has a bust enshrined in Canton who wouldn't make a roster today.
Oh, well, that's a little far. That's a little far. I mean, have you seen the bad quarterbacks we're trotting out there? I mean, we are living in a league where, I must admit, Alex Smith is now in the top half of the league of starting quarterbacks.
I knew you were going to take another shot at Alex Smith. You leave that man alone. He's going to lose his job soon to a rookie.
I'm
okay. All right. So you look at a year like 1979, right? Sorry, 1978. Terry Bradshaw was the MVP of the league, okay? Mm-hmm. Fran Tarkenton, I just pulled the stats real quick, beat him in almost every statistical category. Like, what are you talking about? How does that happen?
Well,
more completions, yeah. More attempts, more yards by a huge margin. And he was not on a team stacked with Hall of Famers on every side of the ball. I literally don't know what makes you more valuable than being the only reason your team wins games.
I have no defense. I'm not going to say anything negative about Fran there. He was awesome.
Man, I don't know. So, okay, so maybe one of my things should have been, maybe next time we do this, and we should probably do this again because I think this is a fun show to do, is just win. Like, QB wins is a stat. Because the only difference between them is Fran Tarkenton, as the only somewhat competent football player on his team, drug them kicking and screaming to 8-7-1. Meanwhile, your boy Terry Bradshaw in 1978 ended up on a team that was 14-2.
Yeah.
But dude, he had Mean Joe Green. Of course he went 14-2.
I can't say anything negative about that. So.
All right. Well, I appreciate at least your insight into Steeler Nation because I mentioned this before kind of off air that, you know, I think people, you know, younger people, you know, I'm going to say, you know, I don't know about our generation, but, you know, people who weren't, you know, adults, let's say, during the Terry Bradshaw era, you know, see him as kind of like America's goofy uncle who talks about football and knows a little bit, but it's kind of dumb. So I'm glad to get some Steelers insight on that. But yeah, that's all I got on Terry Bradshaw.
Hey, the best thing about Terry is his acting ability. I do enjoy him in his B films he does.
The only thing I remember from him is seeing his butt in the movie Failure to Launch, and even that I would say was probably not that great.
There was a football movie, I think it was like Johnny B. Goode or something, where he played like a hillbilly who gets his teeth knocked out in a bar fight. So that was good too.
So he played Terry Bradshaw in a movie one time.
He played older Terry Bradshaw when he was still young. Yeah.
All right, man. Greg, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
All right. That will do it for another episode of Next Fan Up. Thank you, Monty. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Greg, for coming on. You can find me on Twitter. That's at KOREIS. Please follow the show. That's at NFU Podcast. Email us if you disagree with anything we said. I'm sure some of what we said was objectionable. Please do not hesitate. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. We're also still looking for a Lions fan. So if you or somebody you know is a big Lions fan and wants to take over that role, please do so. You can find us online, nextfanup.wordpress.com. And with that, let's turn it over to our old friend Jeff Fisher, because I've kind of missed him. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.